welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Ayen Dangbior in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Friday, April 3rd, 2020. Civil society activists say little is being done to combat the coronavirus.
Where will you isolate that person? There is none of the isolation centers set up in the state, and in particular in Bor.
Health experts are dispelling myths about the coronavirus.
These are just speculation, and it is not true, because we as scientists, we need to have an evidence. Show me the data that show that hot places do not have corona cases.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Civil society activists in the Jonglei state capital Bor say state authorities are doing little to educate communities about how to prevent the spread of coronavirus. The head of Jonglei's health ministry admits implementing preventative measures is a challenge across the state. Dengai Deng reports for VOA from Juba.
The South Sudan government announced several preventive measures weeks ago, including banning all flights in and out of the country, imposing a night curfew, and closing businesses selling non-food items. Even though there are no confirmed cases in South Sudan, according to the World Health Organization, some civil society activists say the government is not doing enough. Ngang Philip Malik of the Jonglei Civil Society Network says many people in Bor County continue to shake hands, attend prayer services in church, and take part in cultural dances. He says despite the guidelines put in place, state health facilities are not prepared to handle one case of the virus.
Where will you isolate that person? There is none of the isolation centers set up in the state, and in particular in Bor. There is no proper awareness that is going on. Like if you go to Bor State Hospital, if there is a case today, you will see the staff will run for their life because there are no protective gears.
Malik says if church services, marriage ceremonies, and cultural dances continue in Bor, it puts people at great risk of contracting the virus.
People are still greeting each other, and I've seen it as a challenge. If you don't want to greet someone to shake hands, a person may feel that you have problem. For the other social events, it is also a challenge. We have seen that it is not being also adhered to. Like last week, churches, there were some prayers that were held.
Ngang says marriages also continue to take place in Bor. Dr. Bolichao, director of Bor State Hospital, admits that isolation units have not been set up at the hospital and there has been no training for staff.
We have these logistical problems, but at the same time, we are on the process. This is not the only place where training is required, but it's just a nationwide. And it will begin at the same time, but at the same time, we are preparing ourselves, and points will be set up where people, those who are coming from distant places, will be screened, and then, if possible, quarantined for 14 days.
Samuel Majuru, Director General of the Jonglei State Health Ministry, says the ministry has formed a COVID-19 task force, but it has no money to carry out awareness campaigns.
The only thing that we need for now is to come with the awareness. We want to make sure that any partner who want to support in terms of awareness is what we want. Risk communication, but these are the things that we need now. And if we need also support on in terms of the any containers for hand washing, soap.
Majuru is appealing to NGOs for financial support so that the state ministry can train staff, distribute hand washing containers and soap, and conduct public awareness campaigns. For VOA News, I am Dengai Deng in Bor.
As residents of Juba transition to working from home to prevent the spread of the novel coronavirus, some Juba residents say the lifestyle change has been difficult. David Manadanga has more for VOA from Juba.
Aside from many workers now teleworking, the government asked all non-essential businesses to close on March 28th as a way to avoid overcrowding to prevent an outbreak of COVID-19. But people who now must work from home and no longer venture out to bars, restaurants, or gyms say it has been difficult to adjust to their new lifestyle. Some employees who spoke to SASDA in Focus complained they do not have access to reliable internet or constant electricity working at home. Sambro Lupai is executive director for I Am Peace, a local organization that works to bring youth together to discuss development issues.
We don't have reliable internet. We don't have power in our houses. So if somebody wants to send a report, the person has to at least charge their laptop somewhere and then write the report from home and then put it in a flash and look for whoever is responsible to get the report, because that person cannot send via internet. The internet is very poor from home.
James Thorne, program manager for the NGO called OK Africa Foundation, says he encounters many challenges working from home.
Yesterday I spent the whole day at home, and it was not really going down to what I had been going through for the last 3 years. The children are playing around. There are a lot of noise. At a time, there's no electricity. So when your computer or when your gadgets goes off, then you are cut off from the work.
On March 20th, the government ordered the closure of all education institutions for 30 days and suspended sports events, religious gatherings, and political events for 6 weeks. Reja Gladys, the lecturer at the University of Juba and a program officer at the Juba-based Ebony Center for Strategic Studies, says working from home is not easy.
It's a bit difficult in South Sudan to work while staying at home, because sometimes if this weak internet, you could see something going on and you have to do. But so far so good, I am adjusting.
Some aid agencies have also asked their employees to work from home to ensure social distancing. But Ngalopima Robert, who works for the private company Development Initiative, says it is difficult to adopt social distancing in a country where many people are rigid and find it hard to change their cultural norms, which encourages people to shake hands.
In our community here in South Sudan, it's not easy. To avoid handshake is a great challenge. When people go outside, you know, people come to greet you. In our tradition, it's hard for other people to avoid.
Robert, who was speaking to South Sudan in Focus on WhatsApp, says he is trapped in a wheel town and wants to travel to Juba to be with his family. Richard Ruati, communications officer at the UN Children's Agency, UNICEF, in South Sudan, is forced to work from home in Uganda. He says he misses that human connection.
You don't have any social connection with colleagues. You have to base yourself on emails only. At some point, you can do telecommunication, like teleconference, like you have to only speak on the phone or on online platforms.
Ruati says it is stressful when family members think you are ignoring them when you become glued to your computer or when you lock yourself in your room to work. But he admits working from home is a good measure to curb the spread of the coronavirus pandemic in the country. For VOA News, I am David Monodanga in Juba.
Health experts and officials are dispelling myths believed by some South Sudanese about the coronavirus pandemic, like drinking tea without sugar protects one from the virus. Others believe God has prevented COVID-19 from reaching South Sudan. As Waki Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba, experts warn those beliefs can pave the way for spreading the virus.
The most common myth about COVID-19 among South Sudanese is that there is still no confirmed case of the virus because the country is too hot. Many argue the novel coronavirus cannot survive in South Sudan's high temperatures, and that is why South Sudan is still COVID-19 free. Dr. Akwai Cham, associate professor at the School of Public Health at the University of Juba, says it's nothing more than a myth.
These are just speculation, and it is not true, because we as scientists, we need to have an evidence. Show me the data that show that hot places do not have corona cases.
Dr. Angok Gordon Kwal, incident manager for COVID-19 at the South Sudan's Health Ministry, agrees.
We don't have studies to show that the hottest spot in the world is South Sudan, and it's already all over. The countries around us, their climate are more or less the same like South Sudan, but they have the disease. So the issue of heat, people are talking about it. They are not yet confirmed.
Scientific evidence indicates the virus can spread to all parts of the world regardless of a country's climate, according to the World Health Organization. Another common myth here is that drinking alcohol can protect one from catching coronavirus, since hand sanitizers contain a high percentage of alcohol. Dr. Kwol says there is no truth to that rumor.
During the pandemic of HIV and AIDS, the same stories were said. Garlic, drink alcohol, situation where we are immune to it, it cannot come. But at the end, it is here in the country now, and we have cases where actually 3% of the population is already affected. So what I want to say is that don't listen to those stories, please. Just protect yourself and protect others.
The WHO says while alcohol or chlorine can be useful in disinfecting surfaces, it does not kill viruses that have already entered the human body. Some South Sudanese say they believe God is protecting South Sudan from the pandemic. Dr. Kwol says these speculations are spread by actors trying to distract the public from practicing the right preventive measures. Dr. Cham says South Sudan is lucky it still has no confirmed case of the pandemic, but once that is no reason for people to let down their guard, noting all of South Sudan's neighbors have confirmed cases. He says the focus should remain on preventive efforts.
One of the first prevention as the country without case so far is social distancing. People need to obey the orders that was given by the government to make sure that there is no more gathering, to make sure that there are no more handshaking, no more hugging, no more social events.
Dr. Simon Deng, a professor and a dean of the School of Medicine and Health Science at Upper Nile University, advises the public to ignore myths and take proactive measures to fight the spread of the virus.
Centers must be increased, and also these preventive measures, the masks N95, and then the gloves and the phones, they should be provided to all facility centers. And then also the government should be very strict about the movement of the people.
The WHO says while certain measures can be taken to relieve symptoms of the virus, there are no specific medicines recommended to treat or prevent the virus itself at this time. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. How will the coronavirus impact developing economies? Find out after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is the funniest thing to ever happen to you?
I was thinking I can cross a gutter. Unfortunately, I found myself in the gutter and everybody was laughing.
The funniest thing to ever happen to me was when I fell down in the marketplace and people were laughing. It became funny to me because I just slipped.
A lot has happened to me, but what I remember, being with my family, discussing, they get to tell me funny stories that make me happy.
The funniest thing that has ever happened to me is moving from the house, picking a vehicle, realizing I don't have money on me. How embarrassing to realize there's nothing on me, just moving out like that.
Try to like ask somebody for money and I tried to like fix something and it didn't work. Well, I was ashamed.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Cameroon says it has seized fake chloroquine from at least 300 pharmacies and hospitals as people rush to obtain the anti-malaria drug in the unproven belief it can stop the coronavirus. COVID-19 infections have increased to more than 300 in Cameroon since the first case was confirmed in February. Moki Edwin Kinzika reports from the capital, Yaoundé.
Anatole Lobbe, manager of St. Martin's Healthcare, a private hospital in Yaoundé, says that since the government announced that counterfeit chloroquine had been found in hospitals and pharmacies throughout the country, he has been careful not to buy fake drugs that could put the lives of his patients in danger. He says he now buys from officially recognized and trusted pharmacies because the demand for chloroquine is high and many suppliers who want to make quick money without any consideration for the well-being of citizens are producing and selling counterfeit chloroquine. Rose Abondo Ngondombala, Director General of Cameroon's National Drug Quality Control and Valuation Laboratory, says the fake drugs are hurting patients trying to recover from malaria.
L'Organisation Mondiale de la Santé avait déjà alerté.
She says on the 9th of March, Cameroon was notified by the World Health Organization of the circulation of counterfeit anti-malaria drugs in its territory and in neighboring Chad and Nigeria. She says since then, hundreds of doctors and nurses from pharmacies and hospitals in Cameroon have been coming to her office to complain that their patients were not responding to anti-malaria treatment and that they doubted the quality of chloroquine that was supplied to hospitals and pharmacies. Mbala said her laboratory discovered that most of what was sold as chloroquine was a mixture of chalk and water. The rush for chloroquine began after French researchers announced that half of 14 coronavirus patients who underwent therapy with the anti-malaria drug got better, and when U.S. President Donald Trump referred to it as a potential cure for the raging virus. Other researchers say much more testing is needed to make sure the drug is effective and safe to use. Meanwhile, Cameroon's government announced Wednesday that it had sealed two pharmaceutical companies and arrested seven staff members who were producing the counterfeit drugs in the western town of Bafoussam. The government also said some of the fake chloroquine was imported from Nigeria. Local media recently reported that a boat smuggling more than 100,000 tablets of fake chloroquine from Nigeria was intercepted by Cameroon's military. The government has not confirmed that report, but Yao Zakari Alaje, the top health official in the Adamawa Administrative Unit, which shares a boundary with Nigeria, warns the public to beware.
Nous avons essayé de tester avec nos pharmaciens. Nous avons tout constaté que c'était pas de bons produits.
He says three laboratories have confirmed that alcohol mixed with water is being served in many shops and public offices with claims that it disinfects against coronavirus. He says people who bought the product either for office or home use should know that it cannot prevent COVID-19. Cameroon's first case of coronavirus was confirmed on February 9. Since then, there have been 8 deaths caused by the virus and 306 cases. The health ministry warns that cases and fatalities will continue to rise if Cameroonians fail to take COVID-19 seriously. Moki Edwin Kinzika for VOA News, Yaoundé.
As COVID-19 continues to spread, so is concern of its potential impact on economies in developing countries, many who are using available resources to combat the virus. Eric Lecompte, the executive director of Jubilee USA Network, says the International Monetary Fund should issue a moratorium on debt repayment for some of those payments so that they can redirect those funds to strengthen health infrastructures.
No doubt we will see a very strong
economic impact that most developing countries will face around the world, whether they be the so-called middle-income countries in the Caribbean or whether they be some of the poorest countries in the world like Mozambique. This is a very severe shock, and it'll likely be most significant on the economies and health systems of the developing world, but it also will quite likely hurt the developing world because we'll likely have a financial crisis that spurred that affects every country in the world because of COVID-19.
This is a concern to, I think, a lot of countries because Africa does have some of the fastest growing economies in the world. There's a Brookings Institution report that says that Senegal, Rwanda, and Niger, these are some of the countries that were projected to have a positive economic outlook this year. So knowing, you know, how unpredictable COVID-19 has been, which countries in Africa are you most concerned about right now?
Well, we're really concerned about most countries in Africa. I think the reality is when we talk about economies that we're looking at growth, many of those actual economies and countries are already requesting emergency assistance from the International Monetary Fund. But when we look at Africa broadly, and in particular sub-Saharan Africa, we already know that countries throughout Africa have been facing a new emerging debt crisis, that there have been great challenges in raising revenue, and we still see staggering numbers in terms of extreme poverty. These are real concerns, and if we look at the majority of countries, even the most developed in sub-Saharan Africa, when we talk about how many critical care beds or critical care units they have per country, most sub-Saharan African countries only have 50 beds per country. So coupling that with the magnitude of a financial crisis, with health systems long being destroyed because of austerity policies that have long been a part of lending and debt restructuring in the region, Africa is a place where we are very concerned.
So, Eric, what can developing countries do to protect themselves? What are some immediate measures that you think countries can take to kind of protect their economies as well as their workforce, really?
Well, one of the pieces that's absolutely urgent for all economies around the world is to be able to put in place stronger unemployment benefits, to increase their social safety nets, their floors of protection, to be able to ensure that more aid is getting to communities that need it, workers that are unemployed, as well as poor people. And so this will demand debt relief and increased financing for many countries in order to do this. I think one of the most important things that we're looking at African countries doing, many African countries are doing. Just earlier this week, on Tuesday, most of the finance ministers across Africa called for a debt payment moratorium to stop paying all of their debts. So how much money does that mean for the continent of Africa? That means $44 billion. It's a huge amount and is very significant because it's right now, if those debt payment moratoriums go forward, that countries can start to bolster their health systems and critically increase their numbers of critical care beds and units in those countries.
That was Eric Lecompte, Executive Director of Jubilee USA, speaking to me from Washington. Sudanese Prime Minister Abdalla Hamdok has called for a nationwide fundraising campaign to support the country's economy and allow the transitional government to implement development projects. A Sudanese analyst welcomes the initiative, but says the government should be transparent and account for donations it receives. Michael Atit has the story for VOA from Khartoum.
Addressing the nation on state-owned television last night, Prime Minister Abdalla Hamdok called on Sudanese to support the transitional government's efforts to revive the country's economy and admits that the government has run into several roadblocks over the last 6 months. He says President Omar al-Bashir's administration mismanaged natural resources for the last three decades, which discouraged international donors from supporting Sudan. Through the campaign Stand for Sudan, Hamdok is asking all Sudanese inside and outside the country to donate money to help rebuild the country's economy. Speaking in Arabic in the nationwide address, he said the Sudanese are generous people.
As we stood together to overthrow the previous regime, we want to stand together once again to rebuild the country after decades of destruction. We need to complete this journey towards building a bright future for our nation through serious engagement and collective participation in democratic development and rebuilding the nation.
Hamdok said the revolution is not yet over and urged Sudanese to continue supporting the transitional government to implement objectives of the revolution.
This popular campaign came as a result of various efforts and popular initiatives of our people, and it calls on every Sudanese citizen inside the country or in the diaspora to contribute to rebuilding our nation. The success of this initiative will stand as proof of our unity and solidarity and our determination to take Sudan out of this difficult moment and rebuild it anew.
Samah Salman, a Sudanese economic analyst who works as a business development manager at Hajar Group, describes Hamdok's speech as an emotional plea. While Salman considers the Prime Minister's appeal a positive move, she believes the transitional government has failed to fulfill its promise of reforming the country's economy, and that is why basic services are still not being provided to the people.
Given the current circumstances, what he did is good. But I think that they have also not, as a government, made good on their promises to the Sudanese people. And I believe that if they had done what they promised to do in terms of recovering misappropriated funds, restructuring the economy, and actually implementing the emergency economic plan, we would not be in the situation that we are in right now.
Salman says even if Sudanese contribute millions of Sudanese pounds to the government, it will not be enough to revive the economy. She says the government should concentrate instead on developing natural resources, a sector, she says, will sustain economic growth. Last week, the head of the Sudan's Sovereign Council, General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, launched a national fund to support the fight against the coronavirus pandemic. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
And that's our show for this Friday. We now leave you with the song Inama by Diamond Platnumz featuring Fally Ipupa.
Ukudekeza kama mtoto, fura unavurahia. Gafo geuka moto, machozi umelia. Mwimama mungene, wena pesa kama Dangote. Naweza nijayo msiki, naweza penda mtu yoyote. Penzi sio somo, kasome kwa kitabu. Penzi mefanya Harmonize, fukuzishe mwarabu. Penzi yoyo meleta kwa wanangu vita. Squeeze is your own. Nashia kwa like it is time. So kupenda achana nai. Ne kupenda penda nanai. Mambo stress ya yubada. Emucheza ufurai. Kama songi limekole.
Asa inama. Ne kupenda mungongo.
Go, 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 go.
Oya inama.
Inama baby.
Wasipenda mungongo.
Mungongo.
Asa inama.
Inama baby.
We've been listening to Diamond Platnumz featuring Fally Ipupa with the song Inama. I'm Ayen Deng Bior in Washington. Thanks for listening, and remember to join us next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Asa inama,
oh, 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 oh.
na kupenda mkogo.